Okay, good to see everybody, and welcome to the evening or morning class and reading. And we're reading from Krishna book right now. And yesterday we finished description of the Rasa dance, and we started with this chapter about the demon who is called Vidyadhara, who took the form of a snake, but actually he was a demigod. So anyway, we're going to hear about that in a second. So first we'll chant. Okay. So we're going to chant without the guitar today, but because I don't have the chords for this song. We can work them out in a little while. Yashomati Nandana Rajabharanagara Gokula Ranjana Kanda Yashomati Nandana Rajabharanagara Gokula Ranjana Kanda Gopiparana Jana Madana Manohara Kaliyata mana vidanda Gopi par anadana Madana manavara Kaliyata mana vidanda Amala hari nam Amiya vilasha Omala hari nam Amiya vilasha Vipina Purandara Navina Garavara Vipina Purandara Navina Garagara Vamshivadana Suvasa Vipina Purandara Navina Garavara Vamshivadana Suvasa Prajajana Palana Surakura Nashana Nandagadana Rakoyala Prajajana Palana Surakura Nashana Nandagadana Rakoyala Govinda Madhava Navanita Taskaru Sundarananda Gopala Govinda Madhava Navanita Taskaru Sundarananda Gopala Jamuna Tatachara Gopi Vasanahara Rasa Rasika Kripa Maya Jamuna Tatachara Gopi Vasanahara Rasa Rasika Kripa Maya Shirada Vallava Vrindavana Natavara Vakati Vinod Ashraya Shirada Pallava Vrindavana Natavara Bhakti Vinoda Shraya Yashomati Nandana Prajajabharanagara Gokula Ranjana Kanda Yashomati Nandana Prajabharanagara Gokula Ranjana Kanda Gopi Parana Jana Madana Manohara Kaliya Jamana Vijana Amala Hari Nam Amiya Vilasa Vipina Purandara Navina Garavara Vamshivadana Suvasa Vrajajana Palana Sura Kula Dashana Nanda Godana Rako Wala Govinda Madhava Navanita Taskara Sundarananda Gopala Yamuna Tatachara Gopiva Sanara Rasara Sika Kripa Maya Shirada Ballava Vrindavana Natabara Vakati Vinoda Shraya Yasomati Nandana Prajavara Nagara Gokulavran Janatana Jaya Prabhupada Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Prabhupada Hari Bol Hari Bol Hari Bol Hari Bol Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvitakacharya. Also Tera Satishi Shimad, His Divine Grace of Aya Chatanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Kijai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai. Prem Se Goho Shri Krishna Chaitanya. Prabhu Vachananda, Shidwaita Gadadha, Shivasati Gaur, Vakta, Vrindikijai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna, Gopikapadath, Sayam Kunda, Radhakunda, Gidi Govardhan Kijai. Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Jagannathasami Kijai. Yamunamai Kijai, Shimatlasidevi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta, Vrindikijai, Gaur, Premananda, Hari Hari Gaur. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Nama Om Vishnupadaya, Krishna Pristaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamani, Namaste Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharni, Nivashesha, Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarni. So I'm going to read the translation. Lord Krishna is the beloved son of Yashoda, transcendental lover in the land of Braja, the delight of Gokula known by the name Kana, the wealth of the lives of the gopis, the attractor of Cupid, and the punisher of the serpent Kaniya. These pure holy names of Lord Hari are full of sweet nectarian pastimes. Lord of the 12 forests of Braja, ever youthful, the best of lovers, player of the flute, and excellent dresser. Protector of the inhabitants of Braja, destroyer of demoniac dynasties, keeper and tender of Nanda's cows, giver of pleasures to cows, land, and spiritual senses, husband of the goddess of fortune, butter thief, and beautiful little coward boy of Nanda Maharaj, wanderer of the Yamuna river banks, thief of the garments of the gopis, enjoyer of the mellows of the rasa dance, very merciful lover and beloved of Sri Radha, the great dancer of Vrindavan, and the only shelter of Bhaktivinod Thakur. So, Bhaktivinod Thakur Ki Jai. So, we're going to continue with our study of the Krishna book, and yesterday we started the chapter of Krishna saving his father from the Vijayadhara. Now, Vijayadhara took the form of a snake, and he was actually a demigod that previously was very proud of his beauty, and he teased the sage, and as a result he got cursed to become an ugly snake, but also he got the opportunity to see the Supreme Personality of God. And so when the sages curse one, That curse is, let's say, a double-edged sword. In one sense, it's a curse. In another sense, it's a benediction. Just like when Narada Muni cursed Manigriva and Nalakuvara, it was actually a curse. They became trees for 100 celestial years. But then later on, they got knocked over by Krishna, and they were able to see Krishna face to face. So, of course, don't tease the sages, because the curse may not be a benediction at that particular point. I was just reading the Bhagavatam, how the young children in Dwarka went and teased the sages, and I'm not going to tell you the details about it, but they teased the sages. I'll tell you the details. There was Samba who was dressed up as a girl. They asked the sages, is this girl, who apparently was pregnant, but it was just a pillow over her stomach, over his stomach, is this girl going to give birth to a boy or a girl? The sages got so angry, they cursed the Yadu dynasty to self-destruct. They said, she will give birth to a club that will be the cause of the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. And they ran to Maharaj Ugrasena, and Ugrasena saw the club, because obviously they gave birth, or someone gave birth to the club, and he arranged for the club to be churned up or chopped up into little tiny pieces and thrown to the sea, and those pieces actually later on washed to the shore and became canes, and ruined the canes, which were used by the members of the Yadu dynasty to beat each other to death. Anyway, so you cannot escape the curses of the sages, you cannot escape your karma, you cannot escape destiny. And of course, the only way you can really mitigate or escape karma is by taking up Krishna consciousness. Then your destiny becomes auspicious, and then your life becomes auspicious. Like Prabhupada said, I have created your good fortune. So Prabhupada created our good fortune. Okay, so let's go to the Krishna book. Om Ganata Madandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unminitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorancia. Okay, so, yeah, the volume is fine. Let's share the screen. And there we go. We are sharing the screen. And let's get this set up. So we're right in the middle of this chapter. And Vijayatara is actually praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead after he's been liberated from that snake body. So my dear Lord, Vijayadhara continued, now, since I think I have become freed from all kinds of sinful activities, I am asking your permission to return to my abode, the heavenly planets. This request indicates that persons who are attached to fruitive activities desiring promotion to the comforts of the higher planetary systems cannot achieve their ultimate goal of life without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the less intelligent want to achieve material benefits and therefore worship different kinds of demigods, but that they actually get the benedictions from the demigods through the permission of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Demigods have no power to bestow material profit. Even if one is attached to material benedictions, he should worship Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and ask him. Krishna is completely able to give even material benedictions. There's a difference, however, between asking material benedictions from the demigods and asking them from Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead for a material benediction, but when he actually achieved the favor of the Supreme Lord and saw him, he was so satisfied that he refused to accept any material benediction. The intelligent person does not worship the demigods or ask favors from them. He directly becomes Krishna conscious And if he has any desire for material benefit, he asks Krishna, not the demigods. Of course, there's a famous verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Akama Sarvakama Mokshakama Dharadi Tivrena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Udasham Param. Whether you are free of material desires, that means Krishna conscious, whether you are full of material desires, or whether you are desirous of liberation, worship Krishna enthusiastically, tivra. Tivra means like forcefully, enthusiastically. So we can see this Vijayadara demigod actually just wanted to go back to the heavenly planets instead of going back to home, back to Godhead. So Vijayadara, waiting Krishna's permission to return to the heavenly planet, said, "Now because I have been touched by your lotus feet, I am relieved of all kinds of material pangs. You are the most powerful of all mystics. You are the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the master of all devotees. You are the proprietor of all planetary systems, and therefore I am asking your permission. You may accept me as fully surrendered unto you. I know very well that persons who are constantly engaged in chanting your holy name attain release from all sinful reactions, and certainly persons who are fortunate enough to be personally touched by your lotus feet are freed. Therefore, I am sure that I am now relieved of the curse of Brahman simply by seeing you and being touched by your feet." In this way, Vijayadara got permission from Lord Krishna to return to his home in the higher planetary system. After receiving this permission, he circumambulated the Lord and offered his respectful obeisances unto him, and then returned to his heavenly planet. Thus, Nanda Maharaj was relieved of the imminent danger of being devoured by the snake. The coward men who had come to execute the ritualistic function of worshipping Lord Shiva and Ambika finished their business and prepared to return to Vrindavana. While returning, they recalled the wonderful activities of Krishna by relating the incident of Vijayadara's deliverance. They became more attached to Krishna. They had come to worship Lord Shiva and Ambika, but the result was they became more and more attached to Krishna. Similarly, the gopis worship goddess Katyayani to become more and more attached to Krishna. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that persons who are attached to worshipping demigods like Lord Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and Chandra, for some personal benefit, are less intelligent and have forgotten the real purpose of life. That's the verses Kamaistajtar, Ritagayana, Prapanjantanya, and Devata. So those who are bereft of knowledge, they surrender to the demigods. But the coward men, inhabitants of Vrindavan, were no ordinary men. Whatever they did it for Krishna. If one worships demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma to become more attached to Krishna, that is approved. But if one goes to the demigods for some personal benefit, that is condemned. After this incident, on a very pleasant night, Krishna and his elder brother Balaram, who are inconceivably powerful, went into the forest of Vrindavan. They were accompanied by the damsels of Brajabhumi, and they began to enjoy their company. The young damsels of Braja were very nicely dressed and anointed with pulp of sandalwood and decorated with flowers. The moon was shining in the sky, surrounded by glittering stars. The breeze was blowing, bearing the aroma of Mallika flowers, and the bumblebees were mad after the aroma. Taking advantage of the pleasing atmosphere, Krishna and Balaram began to sing very melodiously. The damsels became so absorbed in their rhythmical song that they almost forgot themselves, their hair loosened, their clothes slackened, and their garlands began to fall to the ground. At that time, while Krishna, Balaram, and the damsels were so much absorbed, almost in madness, a demoniac associate of Kubera, the treasurer of the heavenly planets, appeared on the scene. The demon's name was Shankachuda, because on his head there was a valuable jewel resembling a conch shell. Just as the two sons of Kubera had been puffed up over their wealth and opulence and did not care for Narada Muni's presence, this Shankachuda was also puffed up over material opulence. He thought that Krishna and Balaram were two ordinary coward boys enjoying the company of many beautiful girls. Generally, in the material world, a person with riches thinks that all beautiful women should be enjoyed by him. Shankachuda also thought that since he belonged to the rich community of Kubera, he, not Krishna and Balaram, should enjoy the company of so many beautiful girls. He therefore decided to take charge of them. He appeared before Krishna, Balaram, and the damsels of Braja, and began to lead the girls away to the north. He commanded them as if he were their proprietor and husband, despite the presence of Krishna and Balaram. Being forcibly taken away by Shankarchuda, the damsels of Braja called out the names of Krishna and Balaram for protection. The two brothers immediately began to follow them, taking up big logs of shallow wood in their hands. "Don't be afraid, don't be afraid," they called to the gopis. "We are coming at once to chastise this demon." Very quickly they reached Shankarchuda. Thinking the brothers too powerful, Shankarchuda left the company of the gopis and ran in fear for his life. But Krishna would not let him go. He entrusted the gopis to the care of Balaram and followed Shankarchuda wherever he fled. Krishna wanted to take the valuable jewel resembling a conch shell from the head of the demon. After following him a very short distance, Krishna caught him, struck his head with his fist, and killed him. He then took the valuable jewel and returned. In the presence of all the damsels of Braja, he presented the valuable jewel to his elder brother, Balarama. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 34th chapter of Krishna, Vijayadara liberated and the demon Shankarchuda killed. So there's actually more to this story of Shankarchuda and the jewel that was told by Srila Rupa Goswami, and it's a very, very interesting story in the Lalita Madhava. So the story goes as follows, in brief, that when Shankarchuda was killed, Krishna took the jewel in the shape of a conch shell from his forehead, from the demon's forehead, and then gave it to Balaram, and Balaram gave it to Radharani. Very interesting. And then Radharani kept that jewel, and in the Lalita Madhava, it's described that after Krishna left Vrindavan, she was so upset that she went into the Yamuna River, and she was taken up. This, and she's actually a description of her expansion as such a Vama. But anyway, so she was taken up by the sun god, who adopted her as his daughter. And later on, of course, she had the jewel with her. Later on, the sun god gave her as a daughter to Satrajit. And Satrajit also got this jewel, Shankarchuda, the jewel. And that became the famous jewel that produced unlimited gold. So anyway, so that's actually a story told by Srila Rupa Goswami. So, okay, let's go on to the next chapter. Chapter 35, The Gopis' Feeling of Separation. So the gopis' feelings of separation, the gopis of Vrindavan, were so attached to Krishna that they were not satisfied simply with a rasa dance at night. They wanted to associate with him and enjoy his company during the daytime also. When Krishna went to the forest with his cowherd boyfriends and cows, the gopis did not physically take part, but their hearts went with him. And because their hearts went, they were able to enjoy his company through strong feelings of separation. In other words, through the feeling of separation, through chanting Krishna's name, through remembering Krishna, Krishna is present. And actually, it's a higher mode of worship than sambhog. Sambhog means meeting. Vipralamba means separation. So this is actually a higher mode. In the material world, okay, in the material world, separation is separation. And even meeting is separation, because people don't have a meeting of minds, a meeting of hearts. Just like you have two people together, and one is thinking one thing, another person is thinking another thing, and they're thinking the other person is thinking something, and so they don't really know what's happening in the other person's heart and minds. So it's not really a meeting of hearts. One of the examples I give is when one has a pet dog, for example, one thinks, oh, this dog really loves me. And they're thinking in terms of what? Human love, which is another subject matter. And the dog is thinking, I just want something to eat. So, or let's say one is going to buy a car somewhere, and you go to the dealership, and you talk to the salesman, and the salesman starts to praise you and say, oh, I know your family, you're really intelligent, I can see this car is for you. And you're thinking, wow, he really likes me. Or you think I'm wonderful. But actually, the salesman is thinking, here's a sucker. So that's the problem in the material world. You don't really have that sambandha or connection. But spiritually, with Krishna, there's actually a meeting of minds, a meeting of hearts, a real connection. So even when there's separation, there's connection. When there's meeting, there's connection. When there's separation, there's connection. And separation means more connection than when you're meeting. To acquire this strong feeling of separation is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya and his direct disciples, the six Goswamis. When we are not in physical contact with Krishna, we can associate with him like the gopis through feelings of separation. Krishna's transcendental form, qualities, pastimes, and entourage are all identical with him. There are nine different kinds of devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna and feelings of separation elevates the devotee to the highest perfectional level, to the level of the gopis. It is stated in Srinivasacharya's prayer to the six Goswamis. That's the prayer that goes, Nana Shastra Vicharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstabako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakaro. Like that, which we chanted when we were reading the Nectar of Devotion and also the Nectar of Instruction. It is stated in Srinivasacharya's prayer to the six Goswamis that they left the material opulences of government service and the princely status of life and went to Vrindavan, where they lived just like ordinary mendicants begging from door to door. But they were so much enriched with the gopis' feelings of separation that they enjoyed transcendental pleasure at every moment. Similarly, when Lord Chaitanya was at Jagannath Puri, he was in the role of Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna. Those who are in the disciplic succession of the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya should always feel separation from Krishna, worship his transcendental form, and discuss his transcendental teachings, his pastimes, his qualities, his entourage. Entourage means the people who hang out around him. Not just people, but, you know, his associates and his association. That will enrich the devotees to the highest devotional perfection. Feeling constant separation while engaged in the service of the Lord is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. The gopis used to discuss Krishna amongst themselves, and their talks were as follows. My dear friends, one gopi said, do you know that when Krishna lies on the ground, he rests on his left elbow and his head rests on his left hand? He moves his attractive eyebrows while playing his flute with his delicate fingers, and the sound he produces creates such a nice atmosphere that the denizens of the heavenly planets who travel in space with their wives and beloveds stop their airplanes, for they are stunned by the vibration of the flute. The wives of the demigods who are seated in the planes then become very much ashamed of their singing and musical qualifications. Not only that, they become afflicted with conjugal love, and their hair and tight clothes immediately loosen. And that's right in front of their husbands, the demigods. Another gopi said, my dear friends, Krishna is so beautiful that the goddess of fortune always remains on his chest, and he is always adorned with a golden necklace. Beautiful Krishna plays his flute in order to enliven the hearts of many devotees. He is the only friend of the suffering living entities. When he plays his flute, all the cows and other animals of Vrindavan, although engaged in eating, simply take a morsel of food in their mouths and stop chewing. Their ears raise up, and they become stunned. They do not appear alive, but like painted animals. Krishna's flute playing is so attractive that even the animals become enchanted, and what to speak of ourselves. Another gopi said, my dear friends, not only living animals, but even inanimate objects like the rivers and lakes of Vrindavan also become stunned when Krishna passes with peacock feathers on his head and his body smeared with the minerals of Vrindavana. With leaves and flowers decorating his body, he looks like some hero. When he plays on his flute and calls the cows with Balaram, the river Yamuna stops flowing and waits for the air to carry dust from his lotus feet. But the river Yamuna is unfortunate like us. It does not get Krishna's mercy. The river simply remains stunned, stopping its waves, just as we also stop crying for Krishna in expectation. In the absence of Krishna, the gopis were constantly shedding tears. But sometimes, when they expected that Krishna was coming, they would stop crying. But when they saw that Krishna was not coming, then again they would become frustrated and begin to cry. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, the origin of all Vishnu forms, and the coward boys are all demigods. So just as Lord Vishnu is always worshipped and surrounded by different demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Indra, Chandra, and others, when Krishna traveled through the Vrindavan forest or walked on Govardhan Hill, he was accompanied by the coward boys. While walking, he played his flute just to call his cows. Just by his association, the trees, plants, and other vegetation in the forest immediately became Krishna conscious. A Krishna conscious person sacrifices everything for Krishna. Although the trees and plants were not very advanced in consciousness, by the association of Krishna and his friends, they also became Krishna conscious. They then wanted to deliver everything, whatever they had, namely their fruits, flowers, and honey, incessantly falling from their branches. When Krishna walked on the bank of the Yamuna, he was seen nicely decorated with tilak on his face. He was garlanded with different kinds of forest flowers, and his body was smeared with the pulp of sandalwood and tulasi leaves. The bumblebees became mad after the fragrance and sweetness of the atmosphere and began to hum. Being pleased by the humming sound of the bees, Krishna would play his flute, and together the sounds became so sweet to hear that aquatic birds like cranes, swans, and ducks were charmed. Instead of swimming or flying, they became stunned. They closed their eyes and entered a trance of meditation and worship of Krishna. One gopi said, my dear friends, Krishna and Balaram are nicely dressed with earrings and pearl necklaces. They enjoy themselves on the top of Govardhan Hill, and everything becomes absorbed in transcendental pleasure when Krishna plays on his flute, charming the whole created manifestation. When he plays, the clouds stop their loud thundering out of fear of disturbing the vibration of his flute. Instead, they respond with mild thunder and so congratulate Krishna, their friend. Krishna is accepted as the friend of the cloud because both the cloud and Krishna satisfy the people when they are disturbed. When the people are burning due to excessive heat, the cloud satisfies them with rain. Similarly, when people in materialistic life become disturbed by the blazing fire of material pangs, Krishna consciousness gives them relief like a cloud. That's a fact. So, you know, if we're actually suffering in the material world, the solution is becoming Krishna conscious. Of course, we have to make some material adjustment too. You know, you go to the doctor. But still, to alleviate the suffering which comes from the mind's attachment to dull matter, one needs to be Krishna conscious. The cloud and Krishna, having the same bodily color, also are considered to be friends. Desiring to congratulate its superior friend, the cloud poured not water but small flowers and covered the head of Krishna, just like an umbrella to protect him from the scorching sunshine. One of the gopis told Mother Yashoda, my dear mother, your son is very expert among the coward boys. He knows all the different arts of how to tend the cows and how to play the flute. He composes his own songs, and to play them he puts his flute to his mouth. When he plays, either in the morning or in the evening, all the demigods, including Lord Shiva, Brahma, Indra, and Chandra, bow their heads and listen with great attention. Although they are very learned and expert, they cannot understand the musical arrangements of Krishna's flute. They simply listen attentively and try to understand, but they become bewildered and nothing more. Another gopi said, "My dear friends, when Krishna returns home with his cows, the footprints of the soles of his feet, with flag, thunderbolt, trident, and lotus flower, relieve the pain the earth feels when the cows traverse it. He walks in a stride which is so attractive, and he carries his flute. Just by looking at him, we become lusty to enjoy his company. At that time, our movements cease. We become just like trees and stand perfectly still, unaware that our hair and clothes are loosening." Krishna had many thousands of cows, and they were divided into groups according to their colors. They were also differently named according to color. When he would prepare to return from the pasturing ground, he would gather all the cows, as Vaishnavas count 108 beads, which represent 108 individual gopis. So Krishna would also count on 108 beads to count the different groups of cows. It's interesting. When Krishna returns, so I guess there are 108 groups of cows. When Krishna returns, he is garlanded with tulasi leaves, the gopi described him to a friend. He puts his hand on the shoulder of a coward boyfriend and begins to blow his transcendental flute. The wives of the black deer become enchanted upon hearing the vibration of his flute, which resembles the vibration of the vinal. The deer come to Krishna and become so charmed that they stand still, forgetting their homes and husbands. Like us, who are enchanted by the ocean of the transcendental qualities of Krishna, the she-deer become enchanted by the vibration of his flute. Another gopi told Mother Yashoda, "My dear mother, when your son returns home, he decorates himself with the buds of the kunda flower, and just to enlighten and gladden his friends, he blows his flute. The breeze blowing from the south creates a pleasing atmosphere because it is fragrant and very cool. Minor demigods like the Gandharvas and Siddhas take advantage of this atmosphere and offer their prayers to your son by sounding their bugles and drums. Krishna is very kind to the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, Vrindavana, and when he returns with his cows and friends, he is remembered as the lifter of Govardhan Hill." Taking advantage of this opportunity, the most exalted demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva come down to offer their evening prayers, and they accompany the coward boys in glorifying the qualities of Krishna. Krishna is compared to the moon born from the ocean of the womb of Devaki. When he returns in the evening, it appears that he is fatigued, but he still tries to gladden the inhabitants of Vrindavan by his auspicious presence. When Krishna returns, garlanded with flowers, his face looks beautiful, adorned with golden earrings. He walks into Vrindavan with a stride just like the elephants and slowly enters his home. Upon his return, the men, women, and cows of Vrindavan immediately forget the scorching heat of the day. Such descriptions of Krishna's transcendental pastimes and activities were remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan. They give us some idea how attractive Krishna is, not only to human beings, but to all animate and inanimate objects. In Vrindavan, everyone and everything is attracted to Krishna, including the trees, the plants, the water, and animals like the deer and cows. That is the perfect description of Krishna's all-attractiveness. The example of the gopis is very instructive to persons who are trying to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. One can very easily associate with Krishna simply by remembering his transcendental pastimes. Everyone has a tendency to love someone. That Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. By constantly chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and remembering the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, one can be fully in Krishna conscious and thus make his life sublime and fruitful. So far today we did second part of 34 and 35. And I think we have enough time to start chapter 36. Oh, now the painful stuff starts. Painful meaning that we're going to see the future chapters, Akrura take Krishna from Vrindavan. And the word Akrura means not cruel, But he is the most cruel. So Vrindavan was always absorbed. So chapter 36, Vrindavan was always absorbed in the thought of Krishna. Everyone remembered his pastimes and was constantly merged in the ocean of transcendental bliss. But the material world is so contaminated that even in Vrindavan, the asuras or demons tried to disturb the peaceful situation. Once a demon named Arishtasura entered the village in the form of a great bull with a gigantic body and huge horns, digging up the earth with his hooves. When the demon entered Vrindavan, the whole land appeared to tremble as if there were an earthquake. He roared fiercely, and after digging up the earth on the riverside, he entered the village proper. The fearful roaring of the bull was so piercing that some of the pregnant cows and women had miscarriages. Its body was so big, stout, and strong that a cloud hovered over its body just as clouds hover over mountains. Arishtasura entered Vrindavan with such a fearful appearance that just on seeing this great demon, all the men and women were afflicted with great fear, and the cows and other animals fled the village. The situation became very terrible, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan began to cry, "Krishna, Krishna, please save us." Krishna saw that the cows were running away, and he immediately replied, "Don't be afraid, don't be afraid." He then appeared before Arishtasura and said, "You lowest of living entities, why are you frightening the inhabitants of Gokula? What will you gain by this action? If you come to challenge my authority, then I am prepared to fight you." In this way, Krishna challenged the demon, and the demon became very angry by the words of Krishna. Krishna stood before the bull, resting his hand on the shoulder of a friend. In other words, he was very nonchalant. That means he was just very relaxed. He wasn't worried. The bull proceeded toward Krishna in anger. Digging the earth with his hooves, Arishtasura lifted his tail, and it appeared that clouds were hovering about the tail. His eyes were reddish and moving in anger. Pointing his horns at Krishna, he charged him just like the thunderbolt of Indra. But Krishna immediately caught his horns and tossed them away, just as a gigantic elephant repels a small, inimical elephant. Although the demon was perspiring and appeared very tired, he took courage and got up. Again he charged Krishna with great force and anger. While rushing toward Krishna, he breathed very heavily. Krishna again caught his horns and immediately threw him on the ground, breaking his horns. Then Krishna began to kick his body just as one squeezes a wet cloth on the ground. Being thus kicked by Krishna, Arishtasura rolled over and began to move his legs violently, bleeding from the mouth and passing stool and urine, his eyes starting from their sockets. He passed to the kingdom of God. Wow. The demigods on the celestial planet showered flowers on Krishna for his wonderful achievement. Krishna was already the life and soul of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and after killing this demon in the shape of a bull, he became the cynosure of all eyes. In other words, the attractive feature of all eyes. All eyes were attracted to him. With Balaram, he triumphantly entered Vrindavan village, and the inhabitants glorified him and Balaram with great jubilation. When a person performs some wonderful feat, his kinsmen and relatives and friends naturally become jubilant. So, of course, connected with the story is the creation of Radhakund and Shyamakund. So after Krishna had killed the Arishtasura demon, the gopis said, "You just killed a male cow, a bull." The bull actually represents principles of religion. And of course, in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you have the four legs of the bull representing cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. So they said, "We're not going near you, Krishna. You got to go to all the sacred rivers." And so what Krishna did is he made the Shyamakund and called for all the sacred rivers to fill Shyamakund, and he went bathing in Shyamakund, and he said to the gopis, "You can go bathing in my lake, Shyamakund, too," because all the holy rivers are here. And they said, "We're not going to go bathing there, because your water in your lake is contaminated because you bathed in it after killing Arishtasura, after killing the bull." we're going to create our own. So the gopis dug up a little bit, and Krishna said, you can use my water to fill your kund. And they said, no, your water is contaminated. Again, they said that. And they tried to form a bucket brigade from Govindakund to bring the water from Govindakund, but it was actually quite far, and they couldn't do it. And so basically Krishna ultimately arranged for all the personified holy places to appear before the gopis and beg the gopis to allow the personified holy places to fill their kund. And the gopis finally agreed, and then the water from the Shamakund overflowed and filled the Radhakund. And Krishna said to Srimati Radharani, this Radhakund is as dear to me as you are, Srimati Radharani. Of course, we told that story before when we were reading the Nectar of Instruction. Anyway, so it was after this incident that the great sage Narada disclosed to Kamsa the secret of Krishna. In other words, Krishna is the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, but now he is appearing as the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai. So Narada Muni was trying to accelerate the pastimes of Krishna also. Narada Muni also went to Krishna and reminded Krishna of his mission, you know, Prichanaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chadushkritam. So Narada Muni is generally known as Deva Darshana, which means that he can be seen only by demigods or persons on the same level with the demigods. But Narada visited Kamsa, who was not at all on the level of the demigods, and allowed Kamsa to see him. Of course, Kamsa also saw Krishna, what to speak of Narada Muni. But unless one sees the Lord or his devotees with purified eyes, one cannot derive the actual benefit. Of course, anyone who associates with a pure devotee derives imperceptible benefit, which is called Agyata Sukriti. So Kamsa, of course, in his last life was Kalanemi, and he was killed by Vishnu. One cannot understand how he is making progress, yet he makes progress by seeing the devotee of the Lord. Narada Muni's mission was to finish things quickly. Krishna appeared in order to kill the demons, and Kamsa was the chief among them. Narada wanted to expedite things, therefore he immediately approached Kamsa with all the real information. You are to be killed by the eighth son of Vasudeva, Narada told Kamsa. The eighth son is Krishna. You were misled by Vasudeva into believing that the eighth issue of Vasudeva was a daughter. Actually, the daughter was born to Yashoda, the wife of Nanda Maharaj, and Vasudeva exchanged his son for the daughter, so you were misled. Krishna is the son of Vasudeva, as is Balaram. Being afraid of your atrocious nature, Vasudeva has tactfully hidden them in Vrindavan out of your sight. Narada further informed Kamsa, Krishna and Balaram have been living incognito in the care of Nanda Maharaj. All the Asuras, your companions, who were sent to Vrindavan to kill different children, were killed by Krishna and Balaram. As soon as Kamsa got this information from Narada Muni, he took out his sharp sword and prepared to kill Vasudeva for his duplicity, but Narada pacified him. You are not to be killed by Vasudeva, he said. Why are you so anxious to kill him? Better try to kill Krishna and Balaram. But in order to satisfy his wrath, Kamsa arrested Vasudeva and his wife and shackled them in iron chains. Acting on the new information, Kamsa immediately called for the Keshi demon and asked him to go to Vrindavan immediately to kill Krishna and Balaram. In actuality, Kamsa asked Keshi to go to Vrindavan to be killed by Krishna and Balaram and thus get salvation. Then Kamsa called for his expert elephant trainers as well as for the wrestlers Chanura, Mushtika, Shala, Toshala, etc. and told them, my dear friends, try to hear me attentively. At Nanda Maharaj's place in Vrindavan, there are two brothers, Krishna and Balaram. They are actually two sons of Vasudeva. As you know, I have been destined to be killed by Krishna. There is a prophecy to this effect. Now I am requesting you to arrange for a wrestling match. People from different parts of the country will come to see the festival. I will arrange to get those two boys here, and you will try to kill them in the wrestling arena. So Kamsa was trying to do something we call hedging his bets. If Keshi was unable to kill Krishna, then Kamsa's backup plan, he has several backup plans. He had the elephant Kuvalyapita, he had Chanura and Mushtika, and ultimately he tried to defeat Krishna Balaram. So He was quite strategic. Okay, so we're going to end here. So we are ending with beginning of chapter 36. Okay. Let us take questions. Okay. Krishna Priya, you have a question. You can unmute yourself. You're muted. Krishna Priya, you're muted.
Am I unmuted now? Okay.
You're unmuted
so,
now.
So, we were talking about Shankachuda and the Shamataka jewel.
Yeah.
So, one thing that's been on my mind, because I was reading different things, like in the story of Tulsi Devi, is that a different Shankachuda?
That's a different Shankachuda, yeah.
Okay, so there were two Shankachudas.
Yeah, and then, sometimes demons have the same name.
Yeah, that's true.
Have the same name too. There's many Krishna Priyas in the movement.
Even here at Nuvaloka.
Yeah, that's true.
But then I have one other question. So the Shankachuda, who's with Tulsi, some people say that he was a cowherd boy that was cursed by Srimati Radharani in Goloka. And some say that it was Sudama, and some say it was Sridhama. I've seen it written different places, and I just wanted to ask you about that.
It was either Sudama or Sridhama. I mean, in different Puranas, it tells the story a little bit differently.
So it depends on the different kalpa, the different time, who it was.
Yeah. Well, you know, in one of the Puranas, they just didn't get it.
And then I heard a class, it was a class a long time ago, it was by Indra, because I was like looking for classes that are on the verses we're doing in the Bhagavatam, and that one happened to come up. And then he was saying how it was known that it was said at that time that that part of that curse was that Radharani would appear to be separated from Krishna for 100 years, and like that was part of the pastime, that it appears that they're separated. Do you know about that?
No, I don't know about that story.
Okay. Anyway, I was just asking. It was on my mind, but there's definitely two different Shankachudas. They just have the same name.
Yeah, there's definitely two different Shankachudas because it happened like eons apart.
It was confusing to me. Okay.
Yeah, completely eons, you know, probably millions of years apart, the two stories occurred.
Because the story that happened with Tulsi was way before.
Yeah, that was way, way before, like maybe millions of years, maybe hundreds of thousands of years. I don't know the exact time, but it wasn't the same Shankachuda.
So these pastimes take place at different times and different personalities.
Yeah, actually, some of these pastimes are generally eternal pastimes, and then in different universes, and even the demons might have different names in different universes. One universe, it may be Shankachuda, the other one may be Flutachuda, or something.
And some of the details are like in... Are they in, there's like different Puranas? Is that where some of the details are?
Yeah, some of the details are in different Puranas. Unfortunately, most of the Puranas have been changed because they haven't been passed down in the cyclic succession.
Right.
So sometimes you hear these stories and different stories from different Puranas. And, you know, that means they've been added to or things taken away or things changed within the Purana. So, basically, the only Purana we accept, the complete Purana that we accept as absolute is the Bhagavad Purana.
Srimad Bhagavatam and the commentaries by our acharyas.
Yeah, and also if they quote from the other Puranas, then they're establishing those particular verses or parts of the other Puranas to be completely authentic. But even, you know, as you're aware, Shripad Madhvacharya in his Tatparat Niranaya stated that the Mahabharata has been corrupted quite a bit.
My Guru Maharaj always talks about that.
Yeah, so what to speak of the Puranas? If something hasn't been passed down in disciplic succession, then there's every opportunity for contamination. In fact, not only every opportunity, most likely there is contamination if something hasn't been passed down in disciplic succession. So, one has to be very careful. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So, next is Mr. Gopal.
Please accept my obeisances, Srila Gurudev. Regarding the Mahabharata being contaminated, it was said that Srila Vyasadeva, who's an incarnation, an empowered incarnation of Krishna himself, he wrote the Mahabharata specifically for those in Kali Yuga. Yes. So how is it that only 5,000 years into Kali Yuga, the scripture that was specifically written for us has been so corrupted?
Because originally it was passed down word of mouth, because people had such good memories, like the original Vedas, but it was actually so long that people couldn't memorize the whole thing. So they basically summarized or paraphrased some of the stories. I mean, 5,000 years is a long time. I mean, just like, you know, we talk about the Bible, which is over 2,000, well, maybe roughly 2,000, because the Bible was compiled like 80 years after Jesus Christ passed away. So, you know, the Bible has been really changed, adopted, different chapters have been taken out, different chapters have been put in, and the authorship of the Bible is not really authenticated, different parts of the Bible is not really authenticated. So that's a shorter period of time. So you think 5,000 years, changes could not be made? Now the original Vedas, the Atharva, Yajur, Sama, and Rig Veda, they're there in their original form because the Brahmanas would memorize those particular shastras verbatim. Actually, there's something like 60 or 80 different versions of the Mahabharata. And the scholars really cannot understand which is, or they can't put together something called the critical edition of the Mahabharata. Critical edition means the original. I mean, basically, all the editions have the story of the Pandavas, but the details are quite different. Okay?
So if Srila Vyasadeva wrote it for Kali Yugans,
I say he spoke it. I mean, that whole story about Ganesh writing it down.
I see.
We don't know. But I say he spoke it. I mean, just like the Bhagavatam was spoken. And, but you know, basically the story is there. The main story is there. And all the different editions of the Mahabharata. I mean, you have some places where the North Indian edition of the Mahabharata has Parashara Muni and Satyavati doing their thing in the lake on an island. And in the South Indian edition, you have them getting married, you know, with a regular Vivaha ceremony. Okay.
So when Srila Prabhupada says that he presented it for people in Kali Yuga, it's not exactly the word for word that he means. It's just the stories from the Mahabharata he gave to us.
Exactly.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Hrishikesh. Okay, jumped out of the Okay, so
I just wanted to clarify. I also heard, Gurudev, that Ashwatthama, who is currently living, you know, he also spoke about, he has his own version of Mahabharata in South India.
Really? That's interesting.
There's a whole article I read. I don't know. I mean, he just said it's still living and he spoke about the whole, all the events. and it has been documented. It's called
Yes,
Ashwatthama's Mahabharata.
It's possible. It's possible. Cool. There's different Mahabharatas like that. Thank you for that information. Okay, and then finally, Adi Guru.
Hare Krishna Gurudev. Following up on Mother Krishna Priya's and Gopal Prabhu's comments, like, I recently visited Pomona Temple here, Ranganath Temple here, uptown New York, and I came across a sannyasi in Sri Vaishnava. I was like having a conversation, being a Vaishnava, like, and then he mentioned what you just said, that when it goes to the like Acharya's level, they only consider the four Vedas, Brahma Sutras, and 10 principal Upanishads. They don't even consider the Puranas for any of the conversations on that level.
Well, they should consider the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam has been passed down in disciplic succession. That's the Vedic approach, where they only consider the Vedanta Sutra. Vedanta Sutra, Upanishads, and you know, the principal Upanishads and the four Vedas. And that's, you know, the Vedic Brahmanas.
It's good.
But, unfortunately for them, the Bhagavat is actually mentioned, and Krishna is mentioned even in the Rig Veda. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Surya. And also it's mentioned that Itihasa Purananam Panchama Veda Uchite. That's also mentioned in the four original Vedas. What is that? Itihasa means history. Itihasa Purananam, the Puranas, Panchama Veda Uchite, are known as the fifth Veda. So they're not really even understanding that verse, which comes from the four Vedas. Itihasa Purananam Panchama Veda Uchite. Really interesting.
Thank you, Gurudev. Thank you.
Okay, so now we are going to end, because it is time. We're over time. Thank you very much, and we'll see everybody, hopefully, tomorrow evening. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki.